It's an execution for rap. Prison, I got too good for them. Full time or firm up for meds. That's why we ask for I got for strength. It's an execution for rap. Put a rope around them neck, I made them hang. Long time we should have firm up for meds. That's why we have to give thanks for strength.
Welcome back, everyone, to Talks with Trishanae, where we talk the talk and controversy is our main dish. In this week's episode, we'll be discussing capital punishment and, of course, how moral or immoral it is, as well as how moral subjectivity comes into play. I'm Keishanae Virgo.
And I'm Trishana Douglas.
And buckle up, it's going to be a hopefully smooth ride. So let's get right into it.
All right, guys. So, you know, I always come with the definition. The capital punishment, which is also known as the death penalty, is the state-sanctioned killing of a person as punishment for a crime. And the important detail here is state-sanctioned. So no one guard or no one judge can say this person should get the death penalty. It is a unanimous decision made by quote-unquote the state, the laws that be, the institutions, so on and so forth.
Yes. So moral subjectivity, how does moral subjectivity come into play regarding this topic? Right. So persons who are usually against murder take this as an opportunity to utilize their free pass, condone moral subjectivity, or to, you know, endorse it. But who gives us a free pass, really? Moral subjectivity, of course. But the problem I have with this is these people who utilize this quote-unquote free pass aren't subjective with morals right across the board and tend to question other person's morals regarding tough decisions because they have a general objective view of morals. So, how is capital punishment justified, or how can it be justified? People use arguments guilty people should be punished and an eye for an eye. And how it is not justified? Well, killing is wrong. Murder is murder, and thou shalt not kill, and all of that. So capital punishment, persons tend to say that when you issue the death penalty to a murder, for instance, it can deter other murderers from, or other persons who have the intention to kill, from doing such an act. But when I was doing my research, it showed that deterrence doesn't work, or really work, unless the effect, or unless the death penalty is issued at once. Because if somebody murders another person and the death penalty is supposed to be issued, and it's 5 months down the line, in that space of 5 months, persons are say, okay, now go on, so let me do what I have to do, and still go murder. But
it's not an immediate action.
Yes, it's like, it has to be an immediate action for the deterrence to really work. Because if you catch a murderer today, tomorrow, you carry him, for example, in a square with a lot of persons, and you issue the death penalty right there, persons would think twice before murdering or committing acts such as that. And that is how the deterrence method would work. But as it relates to moral subjectivity, persons who usually say murder is wrong or whatever, the phrase trouble is never wicked until it reaches your doorstep comes into play right here, because as soon as somebody for them is violated or murdered, or an act against them is committed, you hear them screaming. Yeah, you hear them screaming. Mm-hmm. Kill him, or if he's dead, or rapist, if he's dead, or this, that. And the objective view of morality is thrown out the window just like that, in that moment where you really feel what you feel the effects of, you're just
taking over.
So,
right.
John.
Mm-hmm. And you know that. I'm sorry. After I finish, I'm going to talk about two great studies, scholars, right? of philosophy, and they really do speak on how the emotions of persons can really cloud, I would say, I don't know if cloud, in space of a better word, cloud your judgment when it comes to such a topic as capital punishment. Because as we have been speaking on many issues with this podcast, we spoke about euthanasia, we spoke about abortion, and while discussing these topics, we saw that there are many gray areas, but with capital punishment, it's either you are against it or for it, right? There is no situation here. And this is where morality really plays a big part, because with abortion, there's such and such case, euthanasia, such and such case, with capital punishment. Yes or no. Right. Mm-hmm. And I do feel like it has to do with the whole idea of the justice system and how it has to be a state-sanctioned rule or law. So I do feel like that plays a major role into it. And the scholars that we'll be talking about today are Walter Burns and Stephen Nathanson. And they wrote a lot of essays, a lot of research on capital punishment, and both of their works came together in this book. I will link the book in the Instagram
before we
story.
Touch on them. I was saying about the deterrence. I was going to say that this person from the Department of Political Science of the Marquess University, when I was speaking of the deterrence effect of capital punishment, he said that if we execute murderers and there is in fact no deterrent effect, we have killed a bunch of murderers. If we fail to execute murderers and doing so would in fact have deterred other murderers, we have allowed the killing of a bunch of innocent victims. I would much rather risk the former. This is, to me, is not a tough call. So to him, he's saying that he's basically using his moral subjectivity to say it's not a tough decision to make. Even if there's no deterrent effect, there's something good that still comes out of it, which is killing a murderer, rather than spurring his life and still no deterrent effect would have taken place and other people still got killed and whatever. So when we're speaking about moral subjectivity on this topic, I mean, as you said, there isn't really a gray area, because the acts or the crimes that usually push persons into that frame of mind, we say, okay, kill him, make him dead, death penalty, are gruesome and unforgivable.
Crimes.
Exactly.
Things that are
and too many times the justice system overlooks these crimes, and then when you look up, these same persons get away and they do the same things. So even though prison is supposed to be like a rehabilitation center, it is not. It is like putting somebody in the worst condition possible, and instead of rehabilitating them, it actually gets them used to that condition. So it like it just covers their skin. So when them come back through, them say, okay, me deal with the worst already, and I'm not make me go back, because me go the one and not never me not there.
You know, many people going for petty crimes like stealing this, and this is not me justifying or saying any crime is good, a crime is a crime and a crime is bad, right? But persons going for petty crimes, not doing their taxes, speeding, that type of stuff, and when they go and they meet the persons who do the really heinous acts, right? Because I know persons who went in for petty crimes and come out knowing how to smuggle certain things, knowing how to fire firearms, knowing how to do all that, because the prison was not the best state for them. And I wanted to touch on something that you said earlier about killing or executing prisoners so they don't make the same mistake. This brings me to think of the little thing that Batman and the Joker has, right? Look back and forth, back and forth. Many seasons of TV shows, everybody know Batman and Joker. And one of my questions when I was looking on this topic is, should Batman kill Joker? I mean, everybody knows that he has the ability to do so. And if he did, then Joker would stop hurting people.
And does that make Batman a bad person for not killing him when the opportunity presents itself? Because mm-hmm. he's going to get out of jail. He's going to get out of the mental facility. We both know this, right? Does it make Batman a bad person?
What a question, because killing is usually wrong. And right? then you're going to say, okay, you're bad right? because you didn't kill him.
But if he did, exactly. right? But if he did, it'd be preventing other people from getting hurt. And right. So we're not going to delve into that, but we're just leaving it for our listeners. They can tell us mm-hmm. their thoughts in the comments.
Right.
So back to the two scholars, Walter Burns and Stephen Nathanson. So Walter Burns is for capital punishment and Stephen Nathanson is against. And in the book, Walter Burns was speaking on certain crimes so heinous they deserve the death penalty, as you were saying before. Persons don't get death penalty mm-hmm. for stealing or arson. They get death penalty for murder, for premeditated murder, for torture, for kidnapping, all of these type of stuff, right? And he was saying that it holds criminals accountable and give them what they deserve, because there are every society has a set of laws, and you go out of your way for whatever reason to break these laws, you right. need to be held accountable, right? You need to get what you deserve, because if the law says do this, then that, why are we ignoring the last part of the law, right? And he also spoke on how society could break down. And I do believe him in this sense, because if I do something so small compared to your heinous act, and we both end up in the same place, then when I come out for my petty crime, I'm going to think, oh, I can go in the big leagues now. I can murder this person or this new idea, because at the end of the day, I'm going to go back into jail. I'm used to jail. I get a place to sleep yeah. and I get meals. They get me. I'm trying to paint this picture for everybody. They at least break down the society, because I can do this and just go to jail. Because people don't see jail as I'm going to get better. They see that, oh, I'm going to stay somewhere for a small period of time, come out and do everything. But it does lead to a breakdown in society. And he was also saying the law must be respected, and it is not only about instilling fear, but it's also showing that, the institutions really do have some mm-hmm. level of control of society. And the law says you have the right to life. Everybody has the right to life, right? And once you violate someone's right, then you basically forfeit your own right to life. And he was saying in the book that they came together to write, that once you violate somebody's right, you basically violate your own rights. And he was also speaking about onlookers and persons that see certain things and don't speak up. And he said, if men, this is a direct quote, if men aren't angry when neighbors suffer by criminal acts, then your moral faculties have been corrupted. And I was thinking about this, your moral facilities have been corrupted. He's basically saying, if you aren't angry, and if you don't want this person to receive the blunt end of justice, then what is wrong with you? Right. What is wrong with the way you think, right? And then Stephen Nathanson, when he was rebutting against what Walter said, he was basically speaking on the aspect of anger. And I do agree with him on this aspect, saying that as a society, we should never let our emotions guide us, right? We shouldn't act on our emotions. And not only in this sense, but overall, when your emotions guide you, can be quite impulsive, right? So somebody do me something, I'm not gonna do them back, but then sometimes you have to take a step back and say, what is the best thing for me to do? Because you don't always have to retaliate, right? And then he went on to say, doing so isn't morally legitimate. And this is where I was a bit concerned, and I took a step back and I was like, what do you mean morally legitimate, right? Because everybody has emotions and everybody has a right to their emotions. But when he said morally legitimate, I feel like he needed to expound on that. And he said that
the only way to really curb and make society better if we have like life imprisonment. But what he was speaking on was, what's the word for the perfect society?
Utopia.
Is that utopia? He was speaking of a utopian society where the prisons are rehabilitation centers and persons learn a new skill and they are prepared for integration back into society. But if you look at it, many societies around the world, I don't know of one where their prisons is a example, right? An example of
how persons who have done wrong can
be treated right.
Watching this thing the other day where they were showing some of the best prisons are prisons that actually facilitate rehabilitation, which doesn't only where they don't plunge the persons who commit a crime into a situation where it go hard them more rather than rehabilitate them to put them back into society. And I think the prison was in New Zealand, if I'm not mistaken, where them have them nice little bed and them have it's still a prison, you know. You still can it's obvious that you're locked up.
You can't really it's stuff like that, right?
You're like it is obvious that they are trying to get persons back into society and get persons back on the right path. So it's not like crackdown or whatever. It's kind of it's relevant, relatively comfortable. And I was looking at that and I'm saying, okay, that this is such a different approach to the usual prison setting. And I think our listeners can go and do your own research as it relates to comfortable prisons and prisons that actually facilitate rehabilitation. And I think that when I think that obviously this isn't a common occurrence, but I think that other prison systems can try to model the thing that they have going on there. But then on the other hand, persons can argue that people do something bad, why would they give them comfortable life? You understand? So it would seem less of a punishment to some and more of, okay, you're basically cuddling a serial killer, you're cuddling a rapist or whatever. And I do understand that because I really don't believe that everyone can be rehabilitated. Some people are just too far gone, to be honest. Some people are too far gone. And
true.
I think that is the problem because we see in history where no serial killers go to prison. And when they come back, them depend them same book. Them depend them same thing. Doing same thing. So I think that...
Right.
Yeah.
And it is I said, it is a double-edged sword because we don't want to be cuddling our prisoners and letting them know that, okay, if you can do whatever you want and then we'll still treat you quote-unquote good, right? But we also don't want it to be a situation where once you come here, you're going to live worse than you entered. And it is a double-edged sword. And I know there's this quote by, I'm going to butcher his name and I apologize. His name is Fyodor Dostoevsky. And he said, the degree of civilization in a society can be judged by entering its prisons. And I do feel like that this is a very deep quote because how you treat those who have done wrong speaks volumes on the society and the justice system and the persons
and
on a whole, right? I do feel like many institutions should find the balance.
The other day when a photo was released of Tommy Lee in prison, the state of the place, like we're not expecting a 5-star resort, but the state of the place, I don't know if you saw the picture, but I'm sure a lot of our listeners would have seen the picture, the state of the place.
Right.
And when you look at Jamaica prison system, they say it's a correction facility and they're aiming to rehabilitate persons to come back into society. Nobody can get rehabilitated. So just to the place look like, you know, when you have to
it was not it the was best near environment.
The worst. Like, it was literally near the worst. You know, like when bus stop, you have the bus stop them and the madman them take over, take it over and start sleep on the bench and at the bus stop. That is literally how it looked, or even worse. Or even worse. Something, some environments like those, it cannot foster rehabilitation. And I think the prison system, they are all talk, like they talk about rehabilitation, but they aren't really putting things into place to ensure that rehabilitation is done. Because really and truly, you know, some persons who are in prison deserve to be in prison, and some persons who are in prison do not deserve to be in prison. Because it can also be, as we were talking about the emotional thing, it can be a one-off case and that person really just needs psychological evaluation and treatment and all that stuff. But then get that shit out of the prison. We are the worst of the worst.
Right, and I don't feel the system, yes, takes enough time to look into each case and say, okay, you can be changed. You can, you know, you can better yourselves. Let us send you to this. Send you to this. Even if it's a trial thing, let us send you to this space. This safe space, you can get some skills, learn a skill, learn how to manage your emotions, and then when your sentence is over, we can push you back into society to be a good civilian. And then this person say, okay, we really can't help you in a part. Let's just go over here and, you know, serve your time and try to get along with others, because you get me. I do feel like some sort of intervention is needed in the justice system. This cannot just be a one-off. Okay, just kill them if they rape. You know,
if they rape,
there needs to be some level of structure.
Kill them if
they rape. Oh yes. But I'm saying, yeah, it was an example. I think it was a bad example. But yes. There needs to be some sort of organization and some level of, can, with the facilities that we have right now, can we help? Can we not help? And what we're going to do
about it
moving
forward. And I think that more investigations, more investigation needs to be done into the nature of the crime, what caused it. Because I don't think, especially in Jamaica, much emphasis isn't being placed on mental health and actually investigating crimes. Because we see how many of the cases are left at a dead end because of the lack of investigation, the lack of following leads. And I think this is attributed also to the corruption that is present in our system, and the emphasis is supposed to be this culture of being an informer, whatever, that we have created in our society is really crippling. Because at the end of the day, it benefits no one. And then when, as I said, when trouble reaches your doorstep now and you realize, oh, this is bad, this is when you realize that it is not a one-person job. It is not up to the police force alone. It is a society effort. And once you realize that, the society is needed in order to foster a system where persons who do wrong aren't hidden and protected, and persons who commit a crime, it is thoroughly investigated to find out the root and the nature and all of that, we will realize that we will have a flourishing society. And I don't think that it is being understood enough by civilians and law enforcement alike.
All right. And, you know, as we always do, we always look on what religion has to say, because we know they love to talk. We know they're always saying something, right? Always have something to say. So, many of the major world religions, you know, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Hinduism, have taken varied positions on the morality of capital punishment. And as such, they have historically impacted the way in which governments handle such punishment practice. And you know, we see this because, as you were speaking in the very first Meet the Host podcast, Western views and Eastern views differ, and this can be traced back to religion and society. And although the viewpoints of some religions may have changed over time, their influence on capital punishment generally depends on the existence of religious moral code and how closely religion influences the government. Right, everybody know that in some parts of the world. I'm not going to name any parts. The church has a great influence on what the, you know, prime minister or the premier or whoever is
church and state,
right?
Like,
right.
So,
right. Right. And religious moral codes are often based on a body of teaching. So, you know, the Old Testament, the New Testament, the Quran, the Torah, the Holy Scroll,
sacred scrolls.
Right. So in Buddhism, there's a strong belief in the compassion of lives for others, and everybody has a right to life regardless. So they strongly oppose the death penalty. In Hinduism, they have not historically taken a stance on the death penalty, and they have little influence on government opinion. However, this is the interesting thing. In India, which is 80% an Hindu nation, like many Hindus are in India, they have the lowest rate of execution. So there isn't any direct line that says do not execute or we do not support capital punishment. But it is evident in the society that it doesn't really happen, right? In Judaism, generally, they disagree with capital punishment. Everybody has a right to life, and that right should be respected. Although the Torah, which is their holy book, describes over 30 situations where the death penalty would be appropriate. So there's a little confusion there. And then we have Christianity. Now, Christianity has a range of conclusions about the permissibility and social value of capital punishment. And we know that in Christianity, when certain acts were committed, the persons would be stoned, or they would be hung on a cross, they would be beaten for simple things like, premarital sex? If they had a child out of wedlock, the woman would be tied up and then stoned. The public would stone her to death. And for treason and blasphemy, they would be beaten, tied to the cross, for stealing. Everybody knows the story of Jesus, right? And some texts forbid execution, and others point to various versions of the New Testament, allow it, approve of it, due to the varying denominations and interpretations of the Bible. So we know we have Roman Catholic, we have Baptist, we have Pentecostal, we have Anglican, and based on those denominations and their interpretation of both the Old and New Testament of the Bible, they have varying accounts of what happened and interpretations of what is in the Holy Book and how capital punishment should be treated.
So my question to this, you said that they have different interpretations, but it's a known fact that as we said, premarital sex would be grounds for stoning and whatever in the Bible. So on the grounds of that, or based on that, would Christianity or would Christians then, how would Christians justify that in the Bible and then justify them, justify them not being in support of it today?
Right. I cannot directly speak for Christians, right, because I am not very well versed with the Bible, but I do have many Christian friends, and whenever I bring up this topic, they always speak to, this is what they always say, right? Interpretation is different. And I do believe that I might read and understand something which is different from what you read and understand, but the bottom line is, petty things, very small things were done, could be done, and persons were killed. So what is your stance? And then they would say, are different now, right? It would be very vague answers.
Not, I think that persons are tiptoeing around the topic, because if you don't have a straight answer, it's okay to say so, but don't tiptoe around the topic, because I think that the Bible is a timeless book, or should be a timeless book that transcends across eras. So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter when it was or what time it was, what time. Yes.
Right. Yeah. It's 100 BC or 2021.
It's supposed
to. It should still
stand firm because the Bible was written for that time and this time as well. Because if it wasn't written for this time, then it would have been rewritten in one of them years there. So
right.
I think that persons just generally tiptoe around these kind of topics, and understandably, we don't know everything in this universe. We're unsure of a lot of things, so we aren't going to get answers or have answers to a lot of stuff, and that's okay. But just give us your view, give us what you think, or your opinion based on your personal morals outside of you being Christian. If you understand what I'm saying, I'm not sure if I'm articulating what I'm
properly. Right, I totally understand what you're saying. I do have two fun facts right here. So, for the Anglican and the Episcopalian, I'm so sorry if I pronounced that wrong. In the biblical times, Anglican bishops in the House of Lords have tended to vote in favor of the retention of capital punishment whenever it is that a heinous crime has been committed. But as for nowadays, I do not know what is their stance, right? Because regardless of anything, there is still one of the Ten Commandments, right? Thou shalt not kill. But what if they did kill? You get me? Do we just turn the other cheek, or do we make an example? And in the 2000s, Southern Baptist Convention, this is a branch of the Baptist denomination, it was said that it is the duty of the state to execute those who are guilty of murder, and God established capital punishment in the Noahic covenant, and this is their interpretation of Genesis 9 verse 6. So they are also in favor of capital punishment.
So I'm going to speak a little about capital punishment in different parts of the world. There are, by numbers, there are 10 countries that are in the top 10 as it relates to executions across the world. So China, this is for 2019. This is an estimate. China did a minimum of 1,000 executions. Iran did 251. Saudi Arabia, 184. Iraq, 100. Egypt, 32. US, 22. Pakistan, 14. Somalia, 12. South Sudan, 11. And Yemen. South Sudan 11, sorry, and Yemen 7. Official data isn't available out of China, where death penalty statistics are a state secret. But the human rights organization Amnesty International estimates carried out thousands of executions in 2012. So excluding China. Excluding China, three countries are responsible for more than 80% of executions. They are Saudi Arabia, Iraq, and Iran. According to Amnesty's figures, China consistently executes more people than any other country. Amnesty collects statistics using official figures, media reports, and information passed on from individuals sentenced to death and their families and representatives. Saudi Arabia was the only country to list beheading as the method of execution. Other methods include hanging, lethal injection, and shooting. In the US, six states carried out executions by lethal injection in 2019, sorry, and one state, Tennessee, used electrocution. In total, 25 people were executed in the US in 2019, and for the 11th consecutive year, it was the only country in the Americas to implement the death penalty. Since 2013, 33 countries have carried out at least one execution. That's very interesting. So excluding China again, excluding China, executions have been falling since 2015. 657 executions were recorded in 2019. That's down 5% on 2018 and represented the lowest number in more than a decade. So, yes, China has everyone. So, according to Amnesty, hold on. Sorry. According to Amnesty, there are 106 countries where use of the death penalty is not allowed by law. 8 countries which permit the death penalty only for serious crimes in exceptional circumstances, such as those committed during times of war. 28 countries which have death penalty laws but haven't executed anyone for at least 10 years and a policy or more formal commitment not to execute. 56 countries which retain death penalty laws and either carry out executions or the authorities have not made an official declaration not to execute. So, as you were saying?
Yeah, I was saying that shooting, because I did not think that would be a method of execution. I know about the lethal injection, the hanging, the beheading, but shooting, because remember, you can get shot, right, and still be alive for a great period of time after you got shot, because sometimes, you know, one person gets shot, they can still keep the bullet inside of their bodies. So I wonder if it's a headshot or for a specific nerve. That seems quite barbaric.
More than likely it's a point blank range, but you're speaking about barbaric. Didn't you hear the beheading parts of it? Like
I understood that. I think probably I'm just a bit shocked, because I've never heard of that before. This guys is important that you do your research. You see? Come with your receipts, come with your facts.
So that's about it on this topic. We would like to hear from you. So you can just click the link in our description. It brings us straight to our Instagram page, where you can just leave your comments, leave your perspective. We love to hear from you. And of course, support the pod by saving, following or subscribing, and of course, listening our ads. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you so much for sharing. We appreciate the support, and we hope you enjoy. Bye.
It's an execution for real. This is not got too good for them. Both time of her mobile meds. That's why we ask Father God for strength. Execution for rape. Prison not got too good for them. Put a rope on them, they can make them hang. We're not no mercy for none of them.